Blog Talk Radio.
This is a product of Beverly Nation. This is the Know Your Rights show, and I'm your host, Terra Strength, on air now, calling from Lagos, Nigeria. Call in, family, 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation. This conversation is brought to you by them boys at Looking Glass Entertainment. And before I begin, I would like to thank Brother Oladeli and the ONE Dynasty family for giving me the opportunity to share my story and my perspective. The topic this evening is Spirituality, A New Perspective, an evening with Sergeant L.J. Caver and Sergeant Carol Russell, part two. The majority of people in the world are under immense pressure to have everything all figured out all of the time. But having everything all figured out is a state of endedness. And you are here to expand, to evolve, and to progress. Let your life be determined by what you are for instead of by what you are against. And both of these were by Till Swan. You guys know she's my favorite. So we're going to get into this interview. There were a lot of callers had a lot of questions. We ran out of time. They weren't able to answer. And so I'm very fortunate that Sergeant Caver and Sergeant Russell came back to visit us again and to help us sort through a lot of this mess and what we're experiencing, and to help give us their perspective to help us better to manage what's going on. I just want to say a couple things before we get into the interview. I was talking to my Facebook family about some of the stats and what's going on right now. And this year is not starting off great, family. I mean, we have a lot going on. Some of the grim stats: the United States has surpassed 400,000 COVID-19 deaths nearly a year after the first confirmed case. 400,000 people dead from this pandemic. And it is still killing. We now have a vaccine out there. There is a new strain that is more contagious that has arrived to our shores. To top it off, we've had an insurrection attempt on the Capitol building a couple of weeks ago. And we're finding out all types of, you know, there are police officers that are involved, all type of people that were involved in this coup that played out in front of us on our TV sets. And tomorrow is the inauguration. And right now, this country is very unstable. It is very unstable right now. We are seeing a lot of dysfunction come out of the Capitol. There's a lot going on right now. It feels like the 60s and 70s right now. You know, and we just have to pray for ourselves, and we have to keep our heads. And we need to, each one of us need to hold ourselves accountable to do better, all of us. There's a lot of fear playing out right now, and it's making people do a lot of crazy things because of the belief in scarcity. So we have LJ, and Carol on tonight to help us to sort some stuff out. Let me bring them on. Sergeant Russell, are you on? Are you here?
I am, sir. Good evening. How are you? And to your listeners, good evening.
Good. Thanks for joining us. Sergeant Caver, are you available?
I'm available. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can hear you loud and clear, brother. I want to thank both of you for joining us again, taking time out of your busy schedules to come on ONE and talk to us and to help calm the natives down, so as to speak.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, Carol, absolutely. I want to start off by saying, and this question is posed to both of you. I know we have questions. You guys have the questions that I'm going to ask, and I'm going to try to get to those tonight if we can. But obviously, you know what I got to start off. What in the world is going on? How did this happen? What the hell is going on, y'all? Okay, now listen, I don't need y'all to talk over at the same time, but you know, I'll start with LJ Caver. What is going on? How did this happen? And how are they finding so many policemen involved in this thing that is just coming out every day?
You would start off with me. That's all right. But to God be the glory. let me just say this. These are only revelations of some of the hearts or the spirits that were in some of the men and women who walk around here in blue uniforms now. This is not anything new. This was just the avenue to basically present it. They really didn't want to be seen, shall we say, but they wanted to be counted. And basically, you're just dealing with a venue that allowed them to express themselves without, at least they believe, without having any repercussion from it. So this is nothing new. This is just a revelation of what has been in place. That's all.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. And you didn't get a chance in the last show to talk about the experiences that you and Sergeant Russell had gone through with your own department that really speaks to what we're seeing now with this insurrection. Sergeant Russell, what is your take on this whole Capitol insurrection thing? Like, what is your take on this thing? And how did this even happen without people being shot?
Well, it's funny that you asked, because I was just having a conversation with a few people about this evening before we all came on the air. And I was giving them examples, not just with this incident with the Capitol, but with anything. In order for you to be able either make change or just to get in, you have to infiltrate a particular structure. So I don't know if you noticed that they are, since this insurrection, they are now vetting even the National Guard members, correct? And
yes.
what they have found some of those Guard members to be a part of supremacist groups. So what I was saying was, I just gave an example of something that maybe they could understand even better. In order, say, gang members, right? So what OG will do is they'll take the cleanest gang member they have, and I don't mean clean soap and water clean. I mean record clean. And they'll have them join the police department, because I think I talked about this last week about how gated it is, and that would include police and any police entity and to include corrections. So in order for you to understand what's going on or to get any type of information, you have to infiltrate that system. So you have to become a part of that system. How do they do that? They get the person that doesn't have a record and become a part of the police department. That actually happened to us during my tenure at the police department.
Mm-hmm.
There was
wow.
a young man who was a part of the Latin Kings. He became a police officer. And what we found out was we started looking at tattoos. And what we couldn't see was within the weaving of his tattoo was the crown for the Latin Kings. Then we saw him, one of their members got killed. So you know how everybody, they put out the memorials with the candles and everything. He's standing guard at the memorial. And everybody was like, holy cow. Yeah. He got in. He had no type of record. He was clean. So just to give you an idea, that is exactly what has gone on here. And when you look at who was a part of this insurrection, who was a part of all this violence, they were firefighters. They were, one of them was a prominent federal judge's son in New York. They were people, like upstanding people, and now their attorneys are saying, oh, they're not bad people. No, but they're involved. In your eyes, they're not bad. Yeah, they're family people. So you want to know how it happened? There was no breakdown. It was allowed.
Mm-hmm.
They basically walked mm-hmm. them in. Come on in. And during their tour, they tore it up.
So So here we are, and we talk about people of color now. We already have a distrust of the police, right? How are we supposed to prosecute?
What was that? I'm sorry, you cut out.
When we see this play out on the highest stage, on the highest level, on the highest court, on the highest, you know what I'm saying, the highest office, how are we supposed to process this?
This is nothing new. We've been fighting this as people of color, especially in this country. We've been fighting this type of evil from the highest step. Remember now, we were the only a group of people that had to be legalized to become humans. So we started off as property, and then we had to fight for our rights to be people. And then all of a sudden, then not only as people, but so this is nothing new to us. It's expected. The issue is that now how do we respond? How do we respond? Okay, they've done something that we know is just it's horrible. You've disrespected your government.
Absolutely.
Now it's becoming an issue with them now. And you'll start seeing things happen and people moved who before wouldn't move and couldn't be moved until. So now we're seeing now something, but now we have to be on point as far as what is it that we do now. Okay, now we they see it. Now they can't deny it. So this is nothing new to us. We've known this. So now our question is, okay, now how do we respond? Because now we're in a different position. We are, because we have people in positions. We have influence, both financially and politically. So now how do we utilize that to bring about our mission? Do we have a mission? That's the question. Do we have a mission as a people?
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very good point between you. You have any more? Do you have any more to say based on what Tabor said, Mrs. Russell?
Well, we have a huge responsibility within our communities. Everything doesn't just fall on the police. We have
Absolutely.
A responsibility as well. And we have to know what that is.
This is deep. This is really deep to hear you two. You two was really what's been starting a lot of trouble. That's all I've got to say.
Well, because it's not new. This is nothing new. See, our people have fought from it, but give God the glory that see those brothers and sisters fought from a position where they weren't even allowed to sit at the same diner counters to be served. They couldn't ride on a bus with the same people. So,
right.
But now look where we are now. Look where we are now. Okay, we don't need to be convinced of that. We know that already. So now, what is our mission? What is our mission as a people? To keep showing them that what they already know, and letting them know, well, see, we told you we saw it. Well, they know we know. Now they can't deny it. So now we make them obligated to the purpose that we have. We need a purpose that outweighs us and outweighs them. We need a mission.
Well said. Absolutely well said. All right. I mean, very, very well said. All right. So on the last show, we had a couple of questions. Call in family. Before I go there, call in family, 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation. Call in and get in on this conversation, family. We got Sergeant Carol Russell, Sergeant L.J. Caver. They're on here now. They're talking about giving their perspective on the insurrection. Call in and join the conversation. Okay. So on the last show, we had a bunch of questions I was going to ask you guys. We weren't able to get there, but we're going to try to get there tonight. We're going to try to get there. So
okay.
I want to know, could you guys explain to our audience what defunding a police department actually means? Because I don't understand it. Maybe you can help me understand that. I know Carol, Caver, you want
says, I have to throw this in, bro. This sister here, she's not just a retired sergeant. This sister is a retired police director. She served in that capacity as a police director. That's why, that's why it's so important for us to understand. She's not just a sergeant. She was a director of a police department that literally hated her for her color and her sexuality. So you're dealing with a sister here who's in a very peculiar, unique position. I'm sorry, Carol, I had to just put that in there, sis.
Oh, well.
Actually, you know what?
Thank you, brother.
You know what? Not to cut you off, but I was talking about Carol on Facebook Live with the Facebook Live family and talking about the couple of panels that she's going to be on in the coming months. And I will have this information posted on my page and everything. But I was talking about her on the panel with a bunch of doctors and talking about these different issues of racism and sexism and genderism, if you will. And so, yes, we know how accomplished she is, and that's why I'm honored to have her on my show to give her perspective on all of this. But can you two explain to me what is defunding the police department? What does that mean exactly?
Well, brother, I guess get down. You first want to know what it means to even defund. And that would be anywhere, any entity, right? And that's a prevention of you continuing to receive money, to receive funds. So the term of defund the police, I mean, it's kind of like it's pretty common misconception to basically strip the police of all their funding, which I don't think would be a really good idea. Some organizations, I think they're even calling for like an abolishment or even a dismantling, if you will, of the police altogether. Again, not a very good idea. One idea that just so stays in my mind. Oh, let me go back a little bit. Talking about defunding the police, it basically is reducing police departments of their budgets and kind of redistributing their funds towards other, other essential social services. And those other services would be like what? Where are we lacking in our communities? And we could go down, a list. I mean, housing and employment are like at the top of the list. Our educational system, even down to mental health care services and services and programs for our youth. I mean, we hear so many people in the community talking about, and especially in our urban communities, the youth have nowhere, they have nowhere to go. There's nothing for them to do. They've taken away this community center. They closed down this program. The youth failing.
Wow.
So basically expanding the use of community mediation and also violent interruption programs. So programs that would help intercede any type of just reducing any type of violent activity and violent crime. But to defund the police, to take away their money totally, that would be almost like, let me go back to the prison system. So you have a group of a faction that had a fight in the prison. So why not just punish them? But what you're going to do is you're going to put the whole prison on lockdown, right? Put the whole prison on lockdown, take away outdoor rec. Even take away indoor rec. Nope, you can't even come out into the rec room and play cards or play chess or checkers or anything like that. All of you, until you, so to speak, learn your lesson. Everybody's staying in their cells. And when they do get a chance to come out to use a shower or whatever, what do you think might happen? That's like once you let a wild animal out of that cage, it'll go berserk. So in mm-hmm. I think in the opposite direction of the police, if you took away their funds, how hard do you think the police are going to work for that community? Like, okay, you taking our money from us, and they get upset about a little bit of something. They don't work now, and they're getting paid. Imagine if you took their pay from them. They're really going to shut down. So me personally, I don't think defunding the police is a good idea. To possibly shift and reallocate some funds, you know, after looking at the budget, if they can do that, that would be great. But to totally take away their money, no. I don't think that's a great idea.
Can I join in right now, Tess?
Sure. Jump in.
I just wanted to say I agree with Sister Carol there, because of the simple fact that what needs to change is our mindset on policing. See, we must understand that. Stop looking at the police department as and unfortunately, especially within in particular the African American community in particular, how the police department was used. See, the police department, how we're supposed to understand it. The police department is a servant, a public servant of the community. They are our tools. They are our tools. And we must understand they are our tools to help protect within our community and to help us maintain safety within our community. They are our tools. They are our servants. Unfortunately, many of them happen to be of the majority. Most of them were white males, because of the simple fact for you to be even called a servant was demeaning to them. But I'm so glad that a man named Jesus said that the greatest among you will be your servant. That's the type of mentality that we have to have. You need to love your neighbor a little bit more than you do yourself. You're here to work for the community, and the community has to take on that same attitude. If the community doesn't take the attitude that, listen, you are our tools within our community, exercise as we see, it's not about taking money. It's about us changing our mentality to let them know that, no, you work for us. And they have to understand that. And you know what it means? It means us, along with them, setting a mission for the community. Why are you here? What is it that we expect from you? What is it that you think you expect from us? But this is why you're here. Help us set the mission for the police department.
Gotcha, LJ. Well said, LJ. I think we have a caller right now in the queue, but your words, well said. Do we have a caller in the queue? Caller?
Actually, you do. Caller number one, you're in line right now with Terror Strength and Know Your Rights right here at ONE, 267-224.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hey, brother. How are you?
Hello, peace and blessings.
Sister
peace
Bessie.
And blessings to you, sister.
Hi,
Sister Bessie, how are you?
How are you doing?
Good to hear you. Good to hear from you this evening.
All right. You know I was going to come up with a question.
All right. Yes,
now,
ma'am.
Yes. I wanted to ask you, well, about a year ago, I did a show on the infiltration of the KKK, the Nazis, and the Nationalists. And when I brought the subject up, the news media denied that these things were going on, because it was a soldier that made a symbol of white supremacy. That was an indication of what was getting ready to go down. And I wanted to ask you, do you think public should arm themselves at this point of what we have seen in the government now? And what else? The other question is, why is there so many Masons in the forces of government more than regular citizens. And one more thing I wanted to say, and then you can answer it for me. We have a past history of David Duke, the head of the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
He said that they would take off their robes and they would go into government with their new identities, like suits. And as we know today, that David Duke was a politician.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about this? This was a warning long time ago that this was leading up to this. And I thank you for your comments on my subjects.
Carol,
ahead,
do you want
Carol.
To comment on what's this about?
Did I say too much?
You said a lot, Sister Beth.
Yeah, you said a lot.
Can you do me a favor? Can you? I want you to repeat what you said in reference to the Masons.
Yes. Why is there Masons influence in the police force, and why is there more Masons in the government forces than regular citizens?
I can give so you have to understand something. When you deal with secret societies love positions of authority and influence. You got to remember, the police department started off as the boys' club. They started off as the good boys because it wasn't just an issue of African Americans and whites. They didn't even let women. You got to remember, women had to fight for their right as well, just to be a female. Even white females understood mistreatment. So it was like the good old boys' club. That's what it was, and basically that's what the Masons is as well. See. I deal with somebody called Jesus, and see, Jesus don't—he doesn't have to do anything in secret. That's why you deal with the truth, and the truth will reveal itself. That's why what you have happening now is happening. That's why you see so many now. You're seeing the so-called officers and firemen and listen, military trained specialists, all students and surgeons. You see all of them in there. Why? Because the truth is going to reveal itself anyway. But we know that already. See, the issue is, why is it? It's because that's how it has been. But the issue is now, what do we do about it? We know it's there. Why is there? Okay, yeah, it's there, and it has, because it's not illegal. You can be a Mason and be a police officer. Technically, you can be a gang member. If you haven't been involved in anything criminal, technically, you can become a police, as Director Russell said already. A member of the Latin Kings didn't do anything wrong. But so it's available to you by law. You can become a member of the police department. But you got to remember, see, those are positions of power and influence and authority. And they even have the exercise of authority over taking someone's life.
Life, yes, right. Stripping you of your freedom and taking your life.
Yes, but when you're talking about taking those positions, of course, politicians have a lot of authority. That's why they like those positions of influence. They make the laws, and they're voted into those positions.
Okay, and the David Duke warning that happened. He was a Ku Klux Klan leader in 1974. Where he said that they would change their image to infiltrate the government.
Faith would disguise himself as an angel of light. That's not something new. That's not new to us. We understand. So you're dealing with right and wrong, righteousness and evil. So what's happening
basically
is that you're dealing with a situation where, and here's the thing, you can't say he didn't change his mind. So we knew that already. So when they get in those positions, what do you expect them to all of a sudden become someone new? I personally believe the only man that can change a person is a man named Jesus, but I'm going to leave that alone right now. But still, if somebody's going to be something, and he's going to tell you what he is, and he's going to say, well, I'm just going to do it by the law that I helped set and make, and get there and do what I want to do. So guess what we have to do? It's the same thing we have, and there's nothing to hide. See, when you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have to hide anything. When you don't have a hidden agenda, so to speak, we can take the test, we can pass the test, we can become the individuals, and then we can, and even if we don't take those positions, we don't have to tolerate the mistreatment. But all that falls back on us. What do we do?
Yes.
Sister Bessie.
Yes.
Did they answer your question, Sister Bessie?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great.
And I want to thank you both for what you're doing, and I'm going to continue listening to the show. And thank you, Brother Terrence, for bringing this show back again. Love you much.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for coming on, Sister Bessie.
Keep your interesting questions coming, because that keeps us on point. That keeps us doing our research.
Great. That's great.
Keeps us informed.
Thank you, Sister Bessie, and thank you, Kyle. I think we have a track coming up next, Brother Olasky. I think we have a track next.
Hey.
I thank you, Brother O, for that. I believe we have another caller in the queue. Caller, who am I speaking with?
Hello, hi, it's Nick. Nick.
Hello.
Okay.
Hi.
Yes, okay, I do have questions, but I'm going to ask a few that I always want to know. I want to know, like, with the police force, like we mentioned, the mindset, people need to change the mindset. That's including police officers and the people of the community. Okay, so we know in African American community, a lot of them don't trust police officers. What I don't understand is why, when police officers are released from academy, why aren't they required to live in the community that they police? Because most of these police officers aren't familiar with the community. They're, I feel like they are more afraid of the community policing because they're not familiar with these people. They don't know the environment. They're not familiar with how hostile it can be. And I feel like, why aren't police officers required to live in the community policing so that way they can be more familiar with the neighbors and become friendlier, like the officer Norman in Arkansas? Why we can't get it like that?
Well, I think that all that depends on state to state, county to county, municipality to municipality, and both of us, Sergeant Caver and myself, were police officers in New Jersey, and with the Civil Service Commission, you are required. It's a requirement that you reside within the town that you are applying for if that department is governed under civil service. And you have to remain a resident till you have graduated from the academy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the glitch. Once you retire... Once you graduate, you can then move anywhere within the state of New Jersey you want.
See, that's the problem.
So, it does become a problem. I think Sergeant Caver and I believe we spoke about this last time, but we kind of went up against that monster of the Civil Service Commission when we were on the police force. The organization that we belong to, the black organization that we belong to, was within our police department, Brother Officers Law Enforcement Society, better known as BOLS. And we brought that to the commissioner. And, of course, like a lot of other things, they dismissed us. But that was one of the pieces we were fighting for it to be a requirement for them to have to live. We were going high, you know, so in the event, if it came through, maybe they'd come down to a lower deal. So we asked for at least, we wanted the highest to be 10 years, and we said the least 7 years. But then we figured, okay, if they give us 5, we'll even be good with that. But it was just to be able to, for these officers to see what happens in this town, how your policing affects our city. Because the majority of them don't live in the city. They come in, they work, and then we see their taillights going down the highway into the townships and not even really close neighboring jurisdictions. They live like out of an hour, maybe 2 hours away. A couple officers were living way, way down the shore. It takes Trenton, if you know geographically, if you look at the map, Trenton is in central Jersey. Some of them live down in Cape May, Ocean County, Atlantic County. It takes about 2 hours to get down there. So it's almost like they want to be as far away from everything as possible, but they'll drive the distance to work here. And we tried hard. We would love for that to be a mandate because I think you don't even have a genuine feel of what goes on in our town, in any town, if you don't live here. You don't have You just come in, you work, and then you leave. But if your family is affected by it, and you think about even in urban communities, in cities that may be riddled with high crime, you know, these officers aren't hearing gunshots at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. They're home sleeping in their townships, in their big, beautiful homes in the township. They're not living in a semi-duplex home in the city and hearing gunshots going off 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. You wake up in the morning and your windshield is all cracked up and on the sidewalk because it got hit overnight by a bullet. That affects us, and actually some of us become very complacent to it. And it's sad that this is just, this is a part of living in the city. No, this is not normal. And that brings on later on down the road, and that's some things that I don't know if the show will even talk about, is the mental trauma that we go through in our towns. That's very traumatizing to be hearing gunshots all the time. Kids are like on automatic when they hear either firecrackers go off or even gunshots that just hit the floor. Who does that? That's not normal. So these are, you know, those are just some of, I kind of went off onto something else, but that really has to do with mandates state to state, whatever state you live in, and then, you know, I break it down from each state and the counties in the state and then the municipalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right,
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Yeah, I agree everything what she said. It's just that because I'm from Atlantic City, New Jersey, even those white officers that was in the police academy, they never lived in Atlantic City, New Jersey, even mm-hmm. in the academy. Like those white officers, they never lived in Atlantic City, even mm-hmm. before. And if that community is paying a tax dollars for that community, they should be required to live in the community where they get paid. And so they can be able to, the community and the officers can trust each other and respect each other on a level where there's not deadly force used or unnecessary force used on people that are not threatening, where they're not armed or not being hostile.
If I can say to you, I know for a fact, I was a detective in internal affairs in my police department and the police department that I was a part of. We did background checks on all the prospective candidates that were trying to come on to the police department. We knew for a fact that certain officers did not live in Trenton. We knew they didn't live there. And I'm going to be very candid with you. We kind of worked in a buddy system. We had partners. We were going out to investigate residency because that's the critical piece. You have to be a resident. You must live here. My partner and I'm looking at the photo and I say to him, who is this guy? Where are we going? We looking for him? He says, yeah. So he tells me where he lives. And I said to him, he doesn't live here. He said, but Carol, we still got to look. I said, I'm telling you, he does not live at this address. I live on the next street over. I never seen this young man before, ever. I go down that street every single day, and I've never seen him ever, ever, ever in the neighborhood or anything. I'm telling you, he doesn't live here. Okay, we still had to go through the motion. Let's fast forward. He winds up coming on the force. So we go to the house. Let me say this to you. We go to the house, and people are living there. It's a rooming house. So we ask for this young man. They're simmering and stammering. He's not here right now. Well, when will he be in? Oh, we don't know. Well, when was the last time you saw him? And they're all looking at each other like, okay, who's going to say what? And I just looked at my partner like, I told you. He doesn't live here. So this the guy, the owner of the house, is just, you know, letting him use that as a rooming house. How about he winds up getting on the force? Okay, he gets on, and he winds up, he may have got stayed on maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and he eventually wound up getting fired. It was in the paper, so I'm talking what's public information, and he wound up being an officer who got caught up with Oxycontin or something like that. I don't know if he was addicted, if he was selling, with something with Oxycontin, and he wound up getting fired. So,
all right, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You just got to try to keep it moving, that's all.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you,
but
Carol.
The sister's right. They need to live in the town that they're serving.
Absolutely.
Can I throw something in there? I don't know if I have enough room. Just quickly. But I want to just say, first of all, yes, sis, that was part of our fight to try to make them live here. But not only that, but see, one of the things that makes it less effective is that when the police department has to give answer to the community that they serve, that's one of the powers that the community has. Have them stand before us as a community and give an accountability of their actions to us that are paying them. If they want to live outside of our city, then we tax them for that. You put a tax on them that they have to pay. I'm sorry, you got to make up for it. But the issue is, their biggest issue is to have to give an accountability to the people that they serve.
That sounds fair. Well said, Caver. I try to keep this moving. Nick, she's one of our new interns at ONE. Thank you for calling in. When is your show?
It's January 29th. Yes, I'm here. January 29th at 9:30.
Welcome.
Thank you. I love this topic.
Welcome to the ONE.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling in. I think we have a third caller in the queue.
Hi.
Am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
How are you doing?
Hi.
Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Hi. It's so exciting to have you two on the show again and to hear you give me your perspectives and dealing with these issues. I just want to thank you so much on behalf of the community. But your talk leads to so many issues and questions for me. But one of the main questions I have is, you know, looking at the fact that we're just 60 years out of the civil rights movement, and, you know, you all have now moved into, we have men and women of color like you who moved into leadership positions in the very law enforcement entities that turned hoses and dogs on us during lunch and protests, you know, and this would appear to be significant progress in our country. And I just wanted to ask the two of you, you know, what do you see as the potential that you and other men and women of color have to influence change in the policies and procedures within this country, law enforcement agencies? You know, we see, it's so interesting to me how we see these people who went to Washington and stormed the Capitol building, and these are the people who we would think are, who we understand are privileged already within our culture and within our society. Yet they feel they have to resort to violence, you know, not just protests, but violent protests in order to have their voices heard when they are already favored, you know, by government and law enforcement. So, you know, when they feel they have to turn to violence, what do we have to do, you know, as people who are less favored by government? You know, do we have the potential to make change from within? Or do we have to turn, I mean, I know it would be irresponsible for you as people who are in law enforcement to promote that, you know, amongst the people, but it becomes a question, you know, is this something that we can change civilly? Or, you know, referring to Sister Bessie's question about needing to take up arms ourselves, you know, and it's not a far-off question when you look at the history and development of this country, which is just completely saturated with violence, and it hasn't stopped. So I know that's a mouthful there, but basically, how much potential do you have as law enforcement leadership to promote change from within, or what do you recommend to our communities of color? You know, I know you talk about organizing, but these people who are favorite are organizing and still using violence. What does that lead us to?
I can just address that quickly. He says when you're talking about addressing something, first of all, when you start talking about gathering guns, and that's to fight who? We are still a minority in this country, and to do the same thing they're doing is only asking for more problems. You got to remember something. When those brothers and sisters did what they did during the 30s and 40s, you're looking at Martin Luther King, you're looking at them brothers and sisters back there during that time, they didn't use violence. They used the influence that we had. I don't know if you ever read the book called Black Wall Street or not, but we have more capabilities now of bringing about change financially, publicly and politically influencing more now than we had before, way back then, when there were a lot fewer of us then. So you're talking about grabbing up weapons. I know what it is. I know it's the fear and it's the anger. Well, if they can do it, we can do it. You got to remember, see, that's the same thing that white flight did. White flight ran out of the city, and so did a lot of our people, too.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about us following them, you see what that got them into, and you see where they are now. Yeah, they're in fear now. That's a lot of fear. That's why they want to run into and kick down their own doors and everything else. We have to understand something. We don't become like the very thing that we resent. You don't become that. You become what they should be. And what we should be is not about picking up guns, because listen, we're killing more of ourselves right now than anybody else. I know we get upset when we hear police officers killing people, but more of us are killing more of us than anyone else when you think about it. And that's with guns that they don't even have to register. So it's not the issue of guns. It's about us using our minds, using our hearts, using the principles that God has set in place that he knows will work and we know will work and has worked. Then we got to use those principles to bring about the change. We don't become like the foolishness that they are. We have to become something greater. And that means that we have more educated people. We have more millionaires. We have more black business owners. We have more political positions. All of that is ours now. Let's use it. Don't become what they are. We see that. So what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stand and have a shootout with who? We don't even have enough to stand up with us now to change a bus stop. We won't even stand up together. That's the type of foolishness we're dealing with. Let's use what we know will work and what has proven itself to work. And those brothers and sisters have already laid the foundation for us.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Brother Caver. You have anything to say very quickly, Brother Russell?
None other than that, we don't want to promote the violence, definitely. Brother Caver said it all. And within the police department, when it comes to us, the only way we can make significant change within the police, we have to make rank.
That's it.
You have to make rank. And I'm talking high rank. Both of us made rank, but I made mine by the time I was just about almost at the end of my career, which I'm happy with and I'm proud of. But we have to elevate as far as we can go. And that mindset that Brother Caper talked about, it has to be there in order, and it has to be with that individual. And once you make rank, it can't be like, okay, I made rank, and everybody else fend for their self. Nope. Pull people up with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that mindset has to change and change.
That's it. Got you. Very good. Well, thank you. Thank you, Sergeant Russell and Sergeant Caver, for those comments. I think we have another track from DJ Olasky. Hello?
You better know it. You better know it. Better know it. Huh.
Please don't deal with your monkey mind. Soon be killed. You better know it. You better know it. Fight for what you think is right. Don't give up.
The city council and all of that. They don't stand before them. They need to stand before the community.
All right, I think we have another caller in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
Caller for whom I... Hello?
I'm here.
Caller four, I think I'm another caller in the queue. Who am I speaking with?
All right, caller four, you're on the line right now. Before we go to our next caller. All right, go to our next caller at this time. And they've been waiting so patiently. Thank you so, so much. Call number five, you're online right now with Know Your Rights right here at ONE Dynasty.
Good evening. Peace and blessings to everyone.
God is good.
Brother Strength, how are you? And how are you? Hello, your esteemed guest. This is Lena Blue.
Yes. Thanks for joining us, Lena Blue.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. My question is, in the spirit of, I think Officer KB mentioned the community being a part of some of the solutions that we need to move toward. And in the spirit of empowering and partnering with the community, I wanted to know, are there any organizations that currently work with the police to intervene in situations when someone's in a mental crisis? And if not, Is this an idea that can become a feasible option, such as in the case with Walter Wallace Jr., unfortunate case?
Yes. Director Russell, are you available? Hello, can I be heard?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I hear you. Mm-hmm.
It actually has been a mandate in New Jersey where officers will have to be trained in mental health training in order to know how to deal with persons when they come upon them or have to engage with them, how to deal with them and with their mental crisis. I have been speaking with some colleagues saying that I have felt for a long time that we need not only, you know, sensitivity training, but mental health training is imperative. Because most police officers, and I saw it when I was on the police force, most police officers will come approach a person who has had some type of mental breakdown or even a medical issue and instantly think it's criminal. Like someone could have had a diabetic, went into diabetic shock while driving and had an accident, and they'll instantly say, oh, they're intoxicated, without even assessing the scene or the person to try to find out what really happened. So I think if they're trained in it, it'll kind of put them quickly on not so much pause, but just throw them into the mindset of, let me not go straight to criminal, but could this person have had be having a mental breakdown? And with the training, they'll be able to recognize that. And again, things that are going on with everybody that may be on this call, it happens from state to state. You know, all states are different, have different mandates. Whatever comes before legislature, and then the bills have to be signed, and you know, it is a process. But I think in March of 2020, the New Jersey's Attorney General did put out that the police departments within the state of New Jersey will get mandatory mental health training.
Great. Outstanding. All right, thank you for that, Carol. Brother Caver, do you have any responses to that, or Carol sufficient?
I believe she's more than sufficient, but I know one thing, and I'll go back to the point that this is something that the community can help in. With the community, once again, you can create another position for someone within the community that's trained for that, that can respond to those type of situations from just a civilian standpoint. But they'll also be hired by the police department or so forth, you know, to participate in this. See, once again, we have to change our mentality.
Right. That's a great idea. Did they answer your question, Lena Blue?
Yes, it certainly did. Glad to hear that, you know, both of you guys are, like, open to, you know, this type of partnership, because I think that's what it's going to take. There has to be much partnership. So thank you for your both for your responses.
And when is your show?
You're welcome.
My show is coming up tomorrow night at 9:30. Awakening the Goddess.
What's it called?
Hey, that's great. And Awakening the Goddess. Outstanding. All right, I think we have a – thank you for joining us, Lena. I think we have another caller in the queue. Caller 5, who am I speaking with?
Yes, you're speaking with Magic Man. How you doing, sir?
Tony Bacatoon, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Always enjoy your show. Always enjoy your special guest. Boy, when it comes to the police, I tell you. Okay. I want to be as fair as I possibly can be. So, you know, I got a million and one questions, so I'm going to try to do it this way. When you deal with a system, and trust me, I can comprehend why there's so much racism within the police force which has been put together to enforce a lot of the people that have had put themselves in positions of power for such a long time. Here's my question, though. I can comprehend about the question about defunding certain things when it comes to the institution, right? I won't even say let's even tackle that issue. But what I want to say is, why can't we, as a people, as a whole, whether you're in the police department, in authority, whatever, when someone maliciously, especially when they do something in the sense of a hate crime, why can't they be processed to the fullest extent of the law? Like when they got caught on camera shooting people that's running away, you understand, or walking away and they get shot in the back, right? And, you know, you got all kind of things that's breaking out that's been hidden for such a long time. So the question that I'm asking is, why can't they be to the point, once they are caught on camera doing something malicious to a person of a different race, can't they be prosecuted to the point of, leave without pay? I mean, really make them pay, because I'm tired of seeing people keep getting a slap on the wrist, and you cannot change a system when people have been so accustomed to doing any and everything and getting away with it for generations.
You just said that you can't change. I think it can change. I think it has changed so much. That's why we saw what we saw on January 6th.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's how much it has changed. On tomorrow at noon, there's a even bigger change. Well, we saw it with our first black president. Now we're seeing how huge is it to see it with a first African-American female vice president.
Right.
So it you know, change doesn't come overnight.
Right.
It just doesn't. Say right. Overnight, right. Meaning even with this, that's just, it's so systemic, it's not going to change even in just a few years.
Right.
Sometimes it takes breaking something all the way down and rebuilding it back up from the ground up. Sometimes it takes that. Camden, New Jersey did that with their police department.
Mm.
They did a complete overhaul in 2013 to the point that the county had taken over, and they overhauled their entire police department. And that chief, he fired cops, he let cops go, and hired a whole new force.
Wow.
And it was a rocky road, but Camden citizens said they started feeling so much safer when they implemented that change. So change, it's a process. And I think maybe my age, maybe I'm getting older, and you know how they talk about, like my kids say, Mom, you didn't treat us like that. You didn't let us get away with stuff like that, because I'm letting my grandkids get away with stuff, right? So it's like over time, we'll start to not be so, I think, angry and trust the process. Now, that's not saying fall back and just let everybody else do their thing, and we put full trust in that old system, because there are still some things within that old system that will filter into the new stuff. So we have to stay cognizant on what's going on, and as I had said before about, in order for us to be part of the change, and when I say us, I'm talking about black folks. In law enforcement, we got to be a part of that system. And we're not a part of that system if we don't make rank, if we're not at that level where change is made. Because as a patrol officer, no. You have
not a whole lot of say in change. As a sergeant, being a first-line supervisor, you can put in suggestions, but not super significant. Your change comes as a first-line supervisor with your subordinates, yes. But where you really have a voice is from a lieutenant and above. Now you're at that managerial position level, and you can start talking about and throwing in your suggestions of change. And again, it's a process. And brother, I agree with you. You know, it is. It's heartening to see. I'm like, I say the same thing. How much more do you need when you saw everything right on camera? How much more do you need?
Yeah, I'm with him with that.
Yes. But again, that's, you know, we're seeing it across this country where black males are getting shot. So many of them are unarmed, and they are being shot by the police. And I want to put out to you, you need to read a book. It's King Rank, and the author is Norm Stamper. He is a former police chief out in Washington State, and Chapter 8 talks about why do white police officers shoot black males.
Wow. Breaking range.
I got it down to the chapter. I read that man's book from cover to cover. And I'm telling you, if his face wasn't on the cover of the book, I would have thought that book was written by a brother. Because this man lays it out, and he talks about the racism that is rampant within law enforcement and police departments. And he was a police chief.
Wow.
Read that book. Wow. Get that book. It's called Breaking Rank by Norm Stamper. And that chapter
may answer
a lot of your questions.
I sure will, and thank you so much again for coming on tonight. And let me say something about that Hall of Fame of DJ right quick. You know, I've been listening to that song probably ever since I probably was in Panthers, I think. But I heard something in there that says, why can't we brothers protect each other? That's what I'm more of an advocate of. And I have more hope and, well, faith and us getting it together than other people, because, again, we're dealing in a racist educational society and so many things that have been used to put other people in positions of power, mainly the European power structure or the white power structure, right? And so there's so many reasons why so many things have been one-sided. I definitely want to take time to say that. And thank you all so much for coming on again. But I got one more thing I want to say to this young man who, to me personally, and I've been a part of this broadcast radio for going into my fourth year, but this young man here, the host of this show, never ceased to amaze me. I mean, he's pretty much is one of the best I have seen in our time. So having said that, I want to say congratulations, Terra Strength, on your ONE Syndication Station all-time connection record. This is your 25th all-time connection record, an unprecedented 28th consecutive and first all-time in this category.
Wow.
Thank you, brother.
Kudos, bro. You're very welcome. And thank you as well.
When is your show, brother? Hold on, for Honey says that, man. Let's talk about this right now, Lenny and Carol. This young man has broken records where people have come on this radio network and did not ever know Terry Shrimp not to break a record. 29 all-time connection records. He's only one from 30. And he hasn't been on the radio for a year and a half yet. And the greatest record in ONE Dynasty history. 28 consecutive all-time connection records. Now you can ask when the show's going to be on.
That's all right. It's all right, man. God is good. That's all right, bro.
Congratulations, brother.
Yes,
job
sir,
well
bro.
Done.
That's all right. Job well
Thank
done,
you.
Man. That's a heart to center. That's all right, bro.
All right. Thank you, all right. I just want to say this right quick. My show was actually on last Thursday. I'm the host of We Will Aware You, and it'll be, I guess, the countdown, something like 20, 26, 27 days or nights at 9:30. I come with a lot of different subject matters, and again, I am the host of We Will Aware You. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. We Will Aware You. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Words. Brother, do we have another? Do we have a caller six in the queue, or you just go on? Do you have a caller six?
At this time, no callers. Let's get these outstanding peace servants to do their thing right now and continue their legacy and education right here on the Dynasty.
Mm. All right, so that was, Brother Hooney's questions were fantastic. You guys answered them. I want to ask a question to you too. I mean, do you guys feel that a lot of police officers are just misunderstood? That we just don't understand them? I know that's a general question, but what is your perspective on that? Are we seeing what we think we're seeing?
Well, what I don't want to happen is for all of us to get thrown, painted with this broad brush. And
right.
Because there are some bad cops out there.
Yes.
There are some brutal cops out there. But what we don't want the perception that because you have you've witnessed some bad activity by maybe the same cop quite a few times, that the entire force is acting in that same fashion, because that is not true. So, one bad thing, can just overshadow all the good that you've ever done in your entire career. And again, I think the public, officers, they may even feel misunderstood because the public doesn't really understand the difficulties of the instant and quick decisions that officers have to make in like a split second. And I don't know if we talked about this last time. It kind of feels like deja vu. But, this occupation is an occupation that you have been given the authority to literally take someone's life. That is huge. That's huge. Police officers, yes, I think sometimes they're misunderstood. And I talked about it being that type of gated community. But we have to make these quick decisions. Our lives are, I still talk as if I'm an officer, but, it's embedded in me. But, officers' lives are literally on the line. And they deal with a whole lot of social ills, right? And then, on top of that, now they have to, they shed that armor, and then they have to go home and deal with their personal lives. And trust me, a lot of them's personal lives, not so intact.
That's right.
Right.
Really?
That's right.
They're dealing with a lot of stuff. They're dealing with the wife, they're dealing with the kids, they're dealing with the mother-in-law, with the this, the that, the neighbor who got they fence a little too much over on their side of their backyard. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. So, we had talked about like trying to bridge that gap. And it's not, the community needs to understand, it is not an us versus them.
Right.
It should not be that us versus them. We, the police need the community, and the community need the police. And the community must understand, they have a responsibility as well to bridging that gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because the police have, the community has been dealt a pretty bad hand by law enforcement. That I would attest to.
But at the same time, even through all of that, it has to be, how is it that each one, reach one, teach one? We got to extend. We have to extend our arms.
Absolutely.
And we have to be willing to help the police as much as we want the help from them. We want them to police our communities with respect. We want to be treated like humans. And we want them to police us and treat us the way they would want police officers to treat their family members and them and their community. So that
Absolutely.
Needs to be understood. And so
okay, well,
to try to, you know, for that misunderstanding.
Okay, well said, Carol. Got to try to keep. I think we have another caller in the queue.
No.
Okay. Caller 7, who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Angela as Commissioner of ONE Syndicated Station. I want to officially congratulate Terry Strength on his ONE Syndicated Station all-time connection record with 29th all-time connection record.
Wow.
And unprecedented 28th consecutive first all-time in category. Congratulations, Terry Strength.
Wow.
Thank you.
All right, man.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you, Angela. Calling in.
You're welcome.
You have a question for our illustrious guest?
No, I'm just enjoying the show. I really am. I want to thank you guys for coming on and sharing with us tonight. Y'all definitely have been sharing some important information, and I thank you. Terrence, your shows are always amazing. So thank you for doing all that you do for ONE.
Wow. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it. And when is your show? You have a show, Walking in Purpose. When is your show? Ms. Smith?
Yes, my show was on last Wednesday. I'm on every 4 weeks from last Wednesday at 9:30.
Okay, outstanding. All right, I want to thank Carol and Sergeant Russell and LJ Caver, and I think it's Ngozi time next, Brother O.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Lenny and Carol tonight. You know, it's hard being a excellent police officer. Through all the chaos, through all the corruption, you know, for people not living in their jurisdiction, people who are frauding, people who are stealing, people who just are not right. And the kids, the youth are looking at you, you know, as a whole, and saying, I can't trust you. No, I'm not going to talk about the murder that has just happened in front of my own face. No, I'm not going to talk about the people who are selling drugs or doing, you know, acts of deprivation in my community. I always say this, you know, we don't live in neighborhoods, we live in communities. People don't care about their next door neighbor. The people they hear howling and screaming when, you know, the kid at late at night playing video games, or, you know, in its innocence, or a woman howling and screaming about being beat. No one is caring about the next-door neighbor. I always said this in almost 8 years of broadcasting. First of all, do you know where your children are right now? Do you know where your children are right now? And having that type of, you know, charity, you will make sure that the next-door neighbor, if they need sugar or if they need their grass cut, you'll do that. If you respect the next door neighbor, if you live in a row home society, you have two, or maybe you live on the corner, you definitely have one. Even if you live in a twin home or separate housing, you know who your neighbors are. No one wants to check. You have to check your own communities. You have to be a person that wants to make sure that the kids are safe outside. I always said this best, that you have a lot of cowards in the black community. Are you willing to die for your children? Are you willing to, you know, go out and say, no, you're not going to do this anymore, and lose your life for a purpose? If everyone in the community said, no, you're not going to do this anymore. Hey, what's going on? Whoa. No, we know who you are. And everybody on this block knows who you are. Stop it.
That's right.
Stop it before we have to turn you in. Let's talk. Let's negotiate. Don't do this here in our community. We want our kids to be able to play in the driveways and you know, in the breezeways and not worrying about being shot, not worrying about, you know, like Carol said tonight, you know, have to hit the floor when they hear something that's unholy, outright dangerous. Our children suffer from PTSD. You know, that's a problem. You know, when our kids have post-traumatic syndromes, what is going on and how are we allowing it? Cowardice. You know, there was a great generation that said, we're not going to take it anymore. And some of those folk in those generations died for the act of freedom. I was talking to a fellow host today. This show tonight is dedicated to Fannie Lou Hamer, a black woman that never gets recognized for her work because of misogynism in the civil rights movement. Fannie Lou Hamer did more in the civil rights movement, you know, than a lot. Shuttlesworth, you know, and the C.T. Vivian's direct this soul, you know, and I can't say more than Dr. King, who really was, you know, courageous in what he accomplished. But Fannie Lou Hamer was in, you know, the background. You know, she was a woman that, you know, without fame or fortune, did more for the civil rights movement and was never mentioned. This show tonight is dedicated to the life and memory of Fannie Lou Hamer. Say her name. Say her name. Come on out on these organizations. Come on out on these organizations. Come back to Lena Blue and Awaken the Goddess. You know, she's a woman that that passed her internship, and we're so proud of her. And I love her very much, and she's going to do an outstanding job for us tomorrow. And that will be 9:30 Eastern Standard Time on these ONE stations. And, of course, Beverly says, I'm talking to ONE, which is Oladeli and Ngozi Enterprise, which is, of course, at www.lookingglassentertainment.wordpress.com, as well as Ngozi Prime Time on at bevnet.com. We're Ngozi Time, both on Twitter and Instagram. Oladeli and Ngozi at Pinterest and Google+. Oladeli and Malay and Ngozi at Facebook, as well as our business page, Know Your Rights, as well as the historic Beverly Nation Online Radio. Established 2013. Any comments, suggestions, or wonderful program tonight? Oladeli. That goes for my@gmail.com. And I am your mother and father's favorite producer, Oladeli Malay Wangosi. Saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Force Radio that support us on a constant basis tonight. Listen, let's do better. If we do better, we will see better. Listen,
amen.
We must support everyone that's trying to make a difference in our own community. And now, congratulations also to Tara Strength, the internet rock star, on his 29th. Now, listen to this now. Understand the history of ONE Dynasty. There's never been a host that's done what he's done. We're not going to mince meat here. This young man, in less than a year and a half, has gone on almost 30 all-time connection records. There is no host in history that has done what he's done with this category. The unprecedented 28 all-time connection records consecutive. The greatest record in ONE Dynasty history. And he keeps coming. Wow. He's the Energizer Bunny. Just going and going and going. I'm glad I was able to give a little soundtrack tonight, you know, and the soundtrack was provided to you, of course, by Isaac Hayes and Curtis Mayfield, as well as the Godfather of Soul, James Brown. I'm gone, y'all. I did my part. My name's Olasky. You know what? You know my name. Say my name. Say my name. Olasky. Say my name.
Oh,
now, that's some music right there.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Sergeant L.J. Kager, Sergeant Carol Russell for joining us and sharing their perspective. You guys did a fantastic job on both of the shows. Please, I'm going to post the information about Carol. She's going to be on a panel talking about mental health and what to do when having encounters with the police officers. Please sign up and be a part of that. And I just want to thank everyone. I'll see you guys in 4 weeks with another great show. Thank you, guys.